Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. Question number one, what is a musical canon? Is it A, a medieval instrument that had a trigger and a booming resonance? Is it B, a concert that intentionally uses music from varied genres? Is it C, repeated melodies that are layered to an interwoven sound? Or is it D, any composition that uses gunfire or fireworks? A musical canon. What is that anyway? And question number two, it was on this day back in 1970 that the song Woodstock was released. So who recorded that hit tune in 1970? Was it A, Bob Dylan, B, Judy Collins, C, Elvis Presley, or D, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young? Woodstock, who sang that song anyway? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of March 28th. Well, it was on this very day, you may remember, back in 1939, that Hal Kemp and his orchestra recorded this hit tune.
Down in the meadow, in the itty-bitty-poo, swam the three little fishes and the mama fishy too. Swim, said the mama fishy, swim if you can, and the swim, swam, swam right over the dam.
Down in the muddy, oh, itty-bitty-poo, swam three little fishes and mama fishy too.
Poop, poop, diddum, dottum, whatum, chew. Poop, poop, diddum, dottum, whatum, chew. Poop, poop, diddum, dottum, whatum, chew. And he swam all over the dam.
By the way, Hal Kemp was an alto sax player and clarinetist who ended up leading the Carolina Club Orchestra, the band of the University of North Carolina, as a student all of 19 years old. Three Little Fishies was composed by Horace Dowell, but he actually took the song from three University of Tennessee Zeta Tau Alpha sorority sisters. Turns out that Dowell, who played saxophone in Hal Kemp's orchestra, somehow ended up riding in the car with the three cheerleaders for breakfast in Knoxville, who taught him their song, Fish Talk. Kay Kaiser's version of Three Little Fishies soon followed, spending 9 weeks at number one on the Billboard charts. But the first recorded on this day back in 1939. And it was 74 years ago today, 1951, that The King and I opened on Broadway. It is the fifth musical by Rodgers and Hammerstein. The musical premiered at Broadway's St. James Theater, and it ran for nearly 3 years, making it the fourth longest-running Broadway musical in history at that time, and has had many tours and revivals. The King and I opened today in 1951. Mark Howard and Dennis Solis' Amber Meadow introduces our music research and technology article. It's titled, Sleepy Time Tunes. Need better slumber? Try some ambient music. This is written by Rob Tannenbaum in AARP magazine from the March 2025 issue. As far as insomniacs, and as a previous one myself, I've tried many methods to fall back to sleep after 3 a.m. wake-ups. I have found that the best sedative is music, specific ambient music. Ambient music is a genre of original music with slow tempos, gentle sustained tones, ample reverb, and scant percussion and bass, says Victor Szabo, author of Turn On, Tune In, Drift Off, Ambient Music, Psychedelic Past. Musician Brian Eno coined ambient music and began to popularize it with his 1978 album, Ambient One, Music for Airports. Studies have validated ambient music's ability to improve sleep quality, says Jesse Koske, an assistant clinical professor at the UC Davis Medical Center. It works via a process called entrainment, a phenomenon whereby our body's natural rhythms like heart rate and breathing sync up with the tempo of a musical piece. Koski says that listening to music with 60 to 80 beats per minute can lower your heart rate. For those who grew up on rock, ambient music can feel boring, but that's the point. Eno was a nervous flyer and used it as a sort of sonic Valium. It's useful when you want to be sedated. Eagles Hotel California introduces our rock music news. It's titled, The Hidden Meanings Behind These Classic Rock Songs. This is written by Joshua McCoy, March the 1st, 2025, in Grunge Magazine. Musicians frequently tie their glorious riffs and rhythms to the events of the day and the goings-on in their lives, drawing from a deep well of unique personal inspiration. In the 1980s, for example, rock bands felt larger than life back in the era of glam, hair metal, and arena rock, when bands like Blondie, The Police, and Chicago scored the most prominent hits of the year, and a legendary producer founded the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. That all-consuming popularity led to some unfortunate assumptions by anti-rock crusaders who often reduced the entire genre down to fast cars, pretty girls, and all the drugs a body can handle. By comparison, modern rock might be up in the air, but those glory days of rock and roll actually come with a shocking world of hidden interpretations. While every band has its fair share of unambiguous songs, there are tons of classic rock tracks that hide their message behind layers of poetry. The hidden meaning behind these rock songs will bring a lot of joy to future listeners. The song playing in the background now, Hotel California, by the way, is about the American dream. Along with the Apple II and Star Wars, the Eagles' Hotel California is one of the biggest cultural achievements of 1977. The classic track, written by Glenn Frey, Don Henley, and Don Felder, started with the baffling title Mexican Reggae. Under its proper name, it won the 1977 Grammy Award for Album of the Year and racked up millions of sales, but it still remains somewhat hard to interpret. The song's masterful use of imagery can leave a listener with too many meanings to narrow down. Thankfully, members of the band have weighed in on the hidden meaning of Hotel California, explaining that the hit song is mostly about their fish-out-of-water experience in the titular state's version of American excess. Speaking to 60 Minutes in 2002, Henley characterized Hotel California as a song about the dark underbelly of the American dream and about excess in America. Henley noted his and his bandmates' experience as middle-class kids from the Midwest, framing the track as their interpretation of the high life in L.A. In a 2016 interview with CBS This Morning, Henley explained the song's narrative as a journey from innocence to experience, a phrase he's used several times. He also added a bit of complexity to the conversation by stating, "It can have a million interpretations." Hotel California.
Things can only get better, boy. Your light can shine in front of you. It catches up with all of us. One certain afternoon. Times are changing, you know that. God knows what you were thinking of. Everybody's watching. They can't destroy you enough. I try to figure out the rules of this automatic game. The streets have got your number. You don't remember your name.
Scapegoat Wax Crawlin' introduces our local music news. It's titled Let the Music Play. Raleigh in early talks for new music festival after Dreamville. The popular Dreamville Festival at Raleigh's Dix Park has released the lineup for its final iteration in 2025. Some of the performers include Lil Wayne, 21 Savage, J. Cole, and Erykah Badu. This is written by Anna Roman, News and Observer. March 24, 2025. When the Dreamville Festival ends after its fifth and final year in Raleigh, local leaders hope the void it leaves will be temporary. The city and Live Nation have begun talking about continuing to hold a music festival, possibly under the Dreamville moniker, at Dorothea Dix Hawk Park. I don't think it's leaving, Mayor Janet Cowell told the News and Observer. I think the current format with founder J. Cole being the headliner, this will be the last year for him. My sense is that it will continue, but it will be like Dreamville brought to you by, as opposed to the current format. Organizers have expressed a strong desire to continue some similar type of festival. We don't have any details really beyond they will really express clear interest. Conversations should ramp up after this year's April 5th through 6th event. Live Nation, the multinational entertainment company, did not respond for requests for comment about this story, but the city of Raleigh would like to keep the music playing. Dix Park is a magical place to do this, Cowell said. We've shown that it can be super successful, and I think we will build on that in 2026.
Your life is shining in front of you. It catches up with all of us.
How Dreamville came to Raleigh. Former Mayor Nancy McFarlane met Cole at a party at the Contemporary Art Museum in downtown Raleigh. He was telling me about how he was originally from Fayetteville, and he really wanted to come back to this area and move his record label Dreamville, all the studios here, and really make Raleigh the center of all of his Dreamville work, she said. I was telling him about the park, and we started talking about a festival and how great that would be. Her initial conversations with Cole helped get things rolling for bringing the Dreamville Music Festival to Dix Park. The then recently purchased 308-acre property the city had bought from the state of North Carolina. I think the big sort of festival and field idea was always something that we kind of dreamed about, and Dreamville helped make it a reality, she said. Despite some initial hiccups, Dreamville proved that big events attracting tens of thousands of people could be held at Dix. Every year provided a new learning experience. Once we did Dreamville, we started to realize all the other pieces that get tied together and were connected to. And so that makes you better prepared every year, McFarlane said. So, how did you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, what is a musical canon? Is it A, it's a medieval instrument that had a trigger and a booming resonance? Is it B, a concert that intentionally uses music from varied genres? Is it C, repeated melodies that are layered to an interwoven sound? Or is it D, any composition that uses gunfire or fireworks? Correct answer, a canon? Is answer C. It's a composition using repeated melodies that are layered to an interwoven sound. Now, as noted in a March 21st, 2025 article by Joe Peskett in ClassicFM.com, titled What is a Canon? You might be familiar with Pachelbel's Canon in D, a popular choice of wedding piece, often heard as the happy couple make their way down the aisle. But have you ever wondered what exactly a canon is? Canons come in many forms, from simple rounds to more complex compositions that have continued to evolve over time. Here we offer a brief introduction to canons and explore some of their unique characteristics. What is a canon? Let's talk canons. A canon follows strict rules, an essence which is baked into its name. The word canon comes from the Greek kanon, meaning law or rule. In music, a canon is a compositional technique where a melody is repeated by one or more voices or instruments entering at different times to create a layered, interwoven sound. As a side note, the word canon actually has two meanings in music. One refers to the technique we're discussing, and the other refers to a collection of works considered essential or worth exploring, often called the canon of classical music. Some of our favorite childhood songs are canons. Take Row, Row, Row Your Boat, for example. This is the simplest form of canon known as a round canon. The same whimsical tune repeats endlessly with each voice entering at different times, creating a playful circular effect. It can also be called an infinite canon because when you reach the end, you simply start again, continuing the loop. Which composers have written canons? Another type of canon is the accompanied canon, and one of the most famous examples of this is the canon in D by Baroque composer Johann Pachelbel. But what makes it an accompanied canon? In Pachelbel's canon, the violins play the same melody, but each entry is spaced two bars apart, creating the round effect. Meanwhile, the bass line, an ostinato, provides a steady harmonic foundation accompanying the violin melody. This combination of repeating melodies and a continuous bass is what makes it an accompanied canon. Now, how did Pachelbel's canon in D become the most popular wedding song? The great Johann Sebastian Bach was a master of the canon form, using it to push the boundaries of musical creativity and expand the canonic repertoire. It works like the Goldberg variations. Bach weaves intricate canons where voices enter at different intervals, creating rich, layered textures. There have been a few unsubstantiated claims that Pachelbel's canon in D was in fact written for the wedding of Bach's brother, Johann Christoph, in 1694, but this is fairly unlikely. From the simple to the complex, composers will continue to experiment with this technique like they have done for centuries before. And the answer to our second question, it was on this very day back in 1970 that the song Woodstock was released. So who recorded that hit tune in 1970? Was that A, Bob Dylan, B, Judy Collins, C, Elvis Presley, or D, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young? Correct answer. That would be answer D, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. Woodstock was written by Joni Mitchell in 1969 and covered by Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young on their March 1970 album, Deja Vu. This song became the anthem for one of the greatest musical events in history. As noted in an OpenCulture.com August 16, 2019 article titled How Joni Mitchell Wrote Woodstock, the song that defined the legendary music festival, even though she wasn't there. Among the slew of iconic late 1960s acts who played Woodstock 50 years ago, one name stands out conspicuously for her absence, Joni Mitchell. Was she not invited? Did she decline? Was she double booked? Mitchell was, of course, invited and eagerly wanted to be there. Her significant other at the time, Graham Nash, reached the upstate New York festival with the rest of his group, CSNY, by helicopter and a stolen truck hotwired by Neil Young. See in the headline 400,000 people sitting in mud and a description of the roads as so clogged with cars that concertgoers were abandoning them and walking, she decided not to take the risk. So how is it Mitchell came to write the definitive Woodstock anthem with its era-defining lyric, "We've got to get ourselves back to the garden"? In the way of all artists, she watched, listened, and used her imagination to conjure a scene she only knew of secondhand. CSNY's version of Woodstock is the one we tend to hear most and remember, but Mitchell's, her voice soaring high above her piano, best conveys the song's sense of youthful hippie idealism, mystical wonder, and just a touch of desperation. The deprivation of not being able to go, she remembered, provided me with an intense angle on the festival. Woodstock, for some reason, impressed me as being a modern miracle, like a modern-day fishes and loaves story. For a herd of people that large to cooperate so well, it was pretty remarkable, and there was tremendous optimism. So I wrote the song Woodstock out of these feelings, and the first three times I performed it in public, I burst into tears because it brought back the intensity of the experience and was so moving. Joni Mitchell did finally get the chance to play Woodstock at Woodstock in 1998 for an appreciative long-haired tie-dyed audience. Many of them, nostalgic for a moment they missed, or were too young to have experienced. The performance highlights the sense of longing that became essential to the song's impact. Sure, it was the irony of the century, the song that best captured Woodstock for the people who were not there was written by someone who was not there. But it was also a perfect recipe for Mitchell to do what she did best, draw humans together while remaining completely on the sidelines. So let's close out today's program with a canon. Here's Pachelbel's Canon in D. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program intended for people who are blind or print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 68. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1755. So long, until next time.